Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. Joining us now is Michael Heaney, a professor of organizational studies and political science at the University of Michigan. Previously, Michael was the William A. Steiger Congressional Fellow of the American Political Science Association, during which time he worked on the staff of the U.S. House of Representatives Committee on Energy and Commerce under Chairman John Dingell. Welcome to Background Briefing, Michael Heaney.
Thanks for having me.
And you've been studying this spontaneous movement, Occupy Wall Street, that has spread across the country and around the world, in part inspired by the Arab Spring with the toppling of regimes in Tunisia and Egypt, and also to some extent by the occupations going on in Spain, where 44 out of 100 young Spaniards are unemployed. What's your sense of the economic quotient here in this protest in terms of that might unite these movements around the world, where the young Egyptians saying we want our future back, they're calling for dignity, the young Spaniards are saying we want jobs. What are the young Americans saying?
Well, young Americans are protesting for a wide range of different causes. Economic equality and reform of financial institutions is one of those causes. But they're also protesting to end the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. They're also protesting to stop damaging the environment. They're protesting for a wide range of political causes on the left side of the political spectrum. Basically, this Occupy Wall Street protest is an event which is being used to galvanize a wide range of issues on its behalf.
And what about the what might unite these movements around the world in a way? In the Arab Spring, it's about the oligarchs, the entrenched ruling families have stolen our future. Isn't that echoed here in America, where these young people are talking about corporate greed and the 1% and we are the 99%? That seems
right to
be
definitely what unites these protests is a desire of the people to gain more power vis-a-vis the government, and a desire to see the reform of institutions, both governmental institutions and financial institutions, for the benefit of the average person. And what also unifies these movements is that they take a perspective on the left side of the political spectrum. So these really differ from, let's say, the Tea Party movement, which is much more on the right side of the political spectrum.
But, Michael Heaney, the Tea Party on the right side of the political spectrum, first of all, they were galvanized by outrage over the Wall Street bailouts. But it seems that they are fairly quickly captured by Republican political operatives like Dick Armey and Karl Rove. They were funded in part by some of the big American plutocrats like the Koch brothers, and they seem to have a very, very strategic political focus in as much as they ran, I think, 70-plus candidates in the 2010 election and got them pretty much all of them elected, and have clearly had an effect on the Republican Party and on the national legislative agenda.
Well, I agree with most of what you said. The one thing that I would take exception to is the idea that they had most of their candidates elected. I don't believe that that's true. But in any case...
Well, didn't they get about 70 seats or something?
Well, it depends on how you count, and it depends on whether you're looking at, whether you're including primaries or not. I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me. Mm-hmm. But you're definitely right. One of the major differences with the Tea Party and what we're seeing with Occupy Wall Street is the Tea Party is working much more closely with the Republican Party. And so the Occupy Wall Street movement does not appear to be a group that is as interested in working as closely with the political system as the Tea Party movement was.
Well, some of the people I've interviewed, both at Zuccotti Park in New York and in the Occupy Los Angeles encampment at City Hall in downtown Los Angeles, is not just keeping a distance from the Democratic Party, but sometimes they express outright hostility at the notion that it's it's sort of corporate light, you know, the name Dick of Tim Geithner comes up along with the others from the Clinton administration. So,
I think that's right. There's a pretty, at the heart of the Occupy Wall Street movement, there's a pretty strong rejection of the way that political business is done in the United States. And so certainly the people that founded the Occupy Wall Street movement and its core supporters are not likely to use those kinds of institutionalized tactics. I would say, however, as the movement grows, that many of the people who become involved in it may have more sympathies toward more traditional political tactics. And I think that you may see the movement spill over into institutionalized politics a little bit more than perhaps its founders had envisioned.
Again, I'm speaking with Michael Heaney, a professor of organizational studies and political science at the University of Michigan. He previously worked on the staff of the U.S. House of Representatives Committee on Energy and Commerce under Chairman John Dingell. And how do you then see it translating into some kind of political action, you know, not necessarily mirroring the Tea Party because you know, you're sort of reminded of Will Rogers' old adage that I don't belong to any organized political party, I'm a Democrat.
Right. Well, it's very difficult to see this kind of political action translate directly into, let's say, policy change. First of all, it's very difficult to make policy changes of any kind in the American political system just because of the supermajority requirements, the filibuster in the Senate, et cetera. The most direct effect that the Occupy Wall Street movement will have is to affect the salience of the issues that it's been pushing. So I would say that the issue of economic inequality is going to get a lot more attention in the 2012 elections than it otherwise might have if you hadn't seen these protests. So affecting the salience of these issues, how much politicians talk about them, whether they're brought up as issues in campaigns, that matters. As far as whether you'll see more direct effects than that, I think you would need to have the movement really take on involvements in elections and involvements in lobbying and campaign finance in ways that it isn't currently talking about doing.
So do you think that this therefore means, and obviously we can't put words into the president's mouth or even suggest any kind of strategy that he might employ in the next year's election, but what if he were to acknowledge the fact that he maybe just doesn't have the power to take on Wall Street and our money-driven politics? That essentially the reason he hasn't got things done is that he's up against this incredibly entrenched and powerful system, and that then he could call upon these people to join him and to give him. I just recall what Roosevelt said when a bunch of progressives were hammering him back in the 30s, not that he wasn't doing enough for them. Roosevelt said to them, make me do it.
Right. I think he will make that kind of argument. I'm skeptical as to whether or not that will really be effective, whether he'll be able to really galvanize people on that basis. I think that it's very difficult for an incumbent president to run in an environment where the economic situation is as bad as it is. And I think that sort of your middle-of-the-road voter is more likely than not to blame President Obama for the current situation.
So what can he say to defend himself then in the country?
Well, I mean, I think he can say what you suggested, which is he can say, look, I need more support. I need support from the movement. I need more Democrats in Congress. We need to get rid of the Republican House. He can say that, but I think that it will be very difficult for him to make that argument in a way that the swing voters will really buy it. So I think he's in a tough situation. Barring a dramatic improvement in the economy, it's going to be hard for President Obama to make a case for his reelection.
And what about obviously he doesn't have anybody on the other side that he can run against yet. and they're getting the Republicans are getting a lot of free airtime with these debates. There's another one on Tuesday night, so they're certainly capturing the airwaves at the moment. But what about the notion? I think there's a bumper sticker out there that says it, that the Republicans are determined that millions of you will lose your job in order that one man loses his job, or something along those lines. Keeping millions of people out of work so that one man loses his job. Does that have traction, do you think?
I'm sorry, I'm not quite following.
I'm saying that there's a bumper sticker, a message, and I'm asking you whether you think this message has traction that's more or less says the Republicans are keeping millions of you out of work so that one man loses his job.
Well, I don't think that it's that. I'm not that cynical. I don't believe that it's that deliberate. I think that Republicans and Democrats have got very different philosophies of how the government should run the economy. I think that Republicans want to see a lot less regulation and a lot less taxation. Democrats see the value of both of those things. So I think it's a matter. I don't think it's a matter of Republicans deliberately trying to harm the economy. I think it's Republicans believing that something very different helps the economy.
And what about what Mitch McConnell has said on a number of occasions, where he seemed to lay down the gauntlet that his top priority is to get rid of Obama? We've just had the president, send his jobs package to the Senate that has a lot of things that the Republicans previously had agreed to. Now, clearly it was a political move, but they nevertheless employed the filibuster and shot it down. You know he's going to run on the do-nothing Congress. So it seems to me that the lines are drawn there. I just don't see,
There's no doubt that there's an enormous amount of partisanship and partisan polarization in Washington, D.C. And I think certainly all of us that live outside of the Beltway would like to see the government find a way, see the two political parties find a way to work together. And there's no doubt that the Republicans are running on obstructionism. But I don't think that they're deliberately harming the economy. I don't think that that's part of the plan. I think that they have a very different vision of how the government should be involved in the economy. The Democrats do, and I think that what they'd like to do is push the Democrats out of office and then enact much of the same legislation, only in the way that they would. In other words, rather than agreeing to a compromise with Obama, they would rather wait until Obama is gone and then push through legislation which is much more purely what they're interested in.
So given the bad economy then, Michael Heaney, and I think that's the historical record is pretty bleak for President Obama, the only incumbent to be reelected with over 9% unemployment was FDR in the 30s, in the midst of the Great Depression. Now we have the Great Recession, and you said earlier, barring a miracle, if the economy improves, I think it would take a miracle, wouldn't it? It's more likely that it's going to go the other way. Things are still uncertain in Europe.
I think the conditions are definitely not favorable for President Obama. In order for President Obama to win the election, I think you would have to have substantial improvement in the economy, potentially some kind of foreign policy crisis could be something that would galvanize support for him. Or alternatively, a Republican candidate who just proved to be unexpectedly bad. So obviously, if the Republican candidate makes a lot of significant mistakes during the campaign, that would open up an opportunity for President Obama. But under kind of your expected conditions, it would seem very challenging for the president to be reelected.
So just in closing, Michael Heaney, if the front runner who is Mitt Romney at the moment, although Herman Cain's quite close to him, but that feels somewhat like a flash in the pan. I, I mean, obviously, Barber would have an easy time running against Herman Cain. There's no question about that. But he'd probably have a difficult time running against Mitt Romney. I'm just wondering, just going back to our original conversation about the Occupy Wall Street movement and this kind of populist awakening on the left that's taking place both here in the United States and around the world. If this movement becomes stronger and its anti-corporate message gains more traction, and I think it is, wouldn't that put Mitt Romney pretty squarely in the crosshairs in as much as he is a kind of corporatist type candidate? He's a CEO. I think his argument is going to be in the election campaign, and it's pretty much evident so far, that I'm the competent CEO and I'll be the CEO of America, and I've run companies and made profits and employed people and all of those things. So do you think that that's possibly there could be a corporatist versus an anti-corporatist battle line in 2012?
Yeah, I think that that's right. I think that Romney definitely will be hurt by the kind of forces that are mobilizing for Occupy Wall Street, and that Occupy Wall Street can potentially help Obama. I think that the problem is that most of the people who are in Occupy Wall Street are on the left side of the political spectrum, and they're generally not part of the middle swing, the middle 20% in a sense of voters who move back and forth from party to party, from election to election. So I think that the Occupy movement will help progressive causes. It will help the Democrats in terms of mobilization, and it will hurt Mitt Romney. But I think that the poor situation of the economy will just overwhelm that effect.
Well, I think
in other words, I think you're fighting against something that is much larger than a social movement. You're fighting against a very difficult economic situation.
It's the economy, stupid.
Essentially, yeah.
Yes. Well, I thank you for joining us, Michael Heaney.
Okay. Well, thanks for talking to me.
It was a pleasure. Again, I've been speaking with Michael Heaney, professor of organizational studies and political science at the University of Michigan. Previously, he was the William A. Steiger Congressional Fellow of the American Political Science Association, during which time he worked on the staff of the U.S. House of Representatives Committee on Energy and Commerce under Chairman John Dingell. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back in a moment.